Just a note before we begin, this episode involves explicit language and descriptions of violence.
Another night, another fight at an East Nashville public housing complex.
As I was on top of him, telling him to stop resisting, give me his hands, I got kicked in the head.
A Metro officer was sent to the hospital, injured in the line of duty.
So this is it. I'm going to pass out. I'm going to die.
This is not an isolated incident. This is not something that's another city's problem. This is our problem, too.
Just because I'm running from the police, that don't mean you're supposed to shoot me.
Man, I know the hardest job in the world is being a police officer, but
you don't shoot nobody in the back. That's a coward move.
He just needs to be held up to what he did. He's a murderer. That's just how I feel.
I'm Mayor Benight, and you're listening to The Promise, a podcast from Nashville Public Radio, a series of stories about life in public housing, smack in the middle of a city on the rise. One neighborhood, two realities, and the city's bold promise to bring it all together. Episode 3, The People and the Police. In James Casey, the police are a fixture. They patrol the place by car, by foot, by bike, even by camera. Interacting with them is one thing you can count on here. Social programs come and go, government investment waxes and wanes, but law enforcement, they're always around. In fact, when I first started visiting Casey, most people assumed I was police, not a teacher, not a social worker. Why else would I be ambling around, knocking on doors, asking people questions? For this episode, we're going to unpack Casey's relationship with the police through two defining moments here: a viral cell phone video of a fight between a police officer and a young man, and the most controversial police shooting in the city's recent history. Both were caught on camera, and both reveal the strain between the people who live in Casey and the people who patrol it. On April 12th, 2016, a little after 6 p.m., Matthew Cameron, a Nashville police officer who'd been on the force for only 3 years, was sitting in his cruiser on South 7th Street.
When the call came in for a shots fired call.
It was a mild spring evening. He was about 2 hours into his shift, cruising the neighborhood with his windows down. He hadn't heard any gunshots, but he figured he'd check it out. He was alone, but he knew that other officers were close by if he needed backup.
So I'm cruising down South 7th, and I get towards Sylvan, and there's people running towards one area.
Right away, Cameron assumed that this probably wasn't a shooting. People run away from gunfire, not toward it. As he drove down South 7th, Casey's main thoroughfare, he saw a large group of mostly young people gathering in one of the courtyards.
So I rolled down, I see the large group, and I chirp my siren. I heard people, when I got out of the car, people, the police are here, police are here.
Cameron saw a young man and a young woman arguing. Bystanders had their phones out, capturing the incident for social media. The fight was over the young man's niece, who was allegedly being bullied. When Cameron saw him push the woman, he decided to intervene. But the man, visibly upset, walked away, refusing to acknowledge the officer's request to talk with him.
He walks past me. I said, "Stop, dude. Talk to me." And he said, "F you. I didn't do nothing." So at that point, I can't let him walk away. I grabbed him because he was still continuing to walk past me, and that's when he took a swing on me. At that point, I wrapped up with him, and I took him to the ground, and he continued to attempt to assault me.
And that's when a bystander, a man named Andrew Hunter, pulled out his smartphone and began filming.
As I was on top of him, telling him to stop resisting, give me his hands, I got kicked in the head. At first, when I felt it, I thought I got hit in the head with a piece of metal or something like that, like a baseball bat. and I was like, well, this is it. I'm going to pass out. I'm going to die.
In the video, you don't see what took the two men to the ground, but what you do see is Officer Cameron on top, punching the man repeatedly with both fists. The man has his left arm wrapped around Cameron's neck. Then another man walks up and kicks Cameron directly in the head. Right after that, a third young man, a teen wearing a black t-shirt, tries to push Cameron off the guy he's fighting with, causing them to roll. So now Cameron's on his back. He manages to get to his feet for a moment and push the man he's fighting with back down to the ground. That's when the teen in the black t-shirt comes around the other side, pulling off Sir Cameron's leg. A couple more people try to kick him in the hip and in the head. Cameron said he tried to radio for backup, but the message never went through.
At that point, I was like, okay, this is going too far.
When Cameron comes out of his daze and realizes he's still in the grips of this fight, he reaches for his pistol.
I was about to draw down on him.
And then the man he was fighting with manages to get loose and sprints away. As he flees, people cheer him on. Run, they yell. Run.
Man, I got this shit on camera, bro. It's going down.
The crowd scatters, so Officer Cameron takes his hand off his gun, which is still snug in his holster. He runs after the man, out of the frame. Eventually, he catches and arrests him, a 22-year-old named Brian Shannon. The video, which is grainy and crude, was uploaded to Facebook and viewed more than 3 million times. It quickly went viral, getting picked up by news outlets here and abroad. Today, it has 21,000 comments. Among them are ones like, shoot first, ask questions later. A few people recommended they build a wall around Casey and have the police stop responding. Let the problem take care of itself, one wrote. A little under 90 seconds, the video captures the fight up close, and it's really unsettling. Everyone's just standing there, maybe 50 people. It's loud. No one tries to help Officer Cameron. Some are egging on the man fighting with him. In fact, only one person, a neighbor, called 911 to report the fight.
911, what's the exact location of your emergency?
On South 7th Street, they jumped on police.
Where is this occurring?
On South 7th Street.
Is there a cross street or address?
No, I don't know. All I know, they're beating up the police.
Okay, can you give me the nearest street?
Shelby Street.
Officer Cameron, bloody and concussed, was whisked away in an ambulance. Brian Shannon, who'd gone to Casey that day to pick up his niece, was charged with 6 counts, including assault. So was Shannon's cousin, Michael Mays. He's the man who kicked Cameron in the head. The next day, Nashville's mayor, the police chief, as well as the president of the police union, held a press conference, promising to prosecute the alleged attackers to the fullest extent of the law. It was the second time that week an officer had been assaulted in Casey. The day before, a cop was stabbed in the hand while trying to break up another fight. With 2 of their own injured in the line of duty, Nashville police immediately began cracking down, flooding the project with officers.
I mean, you had motors officers down there. You had people coming over there from different precincts to work just to sit there and to clean it out to make sure the people there were supposed to be doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Cameron's boss, the precinct's commander, reassigned every tactical officer he had to the complex. Patrol officers started working in pairs. Casey was monitored by helicopter, and the housing authority dispatched a team of officers to police Casey exclusively until further notice. The city asked clergy to establish a presence, hoping it would ease tensions. They also announced they were installing more than 150 cameras. Some residents welcomed the tactic. For others, it felt more like Big Brother, chafing an already tenuous relationship. And many wondered, why now? The year before, there were 35 assaults and 3 people killed in Casey. Now a cop gets roughed up and they flood the place? Meanwhile, Officer Cameron's life took its own turn. Just 2 months before, he'd been named Officer of the Year for saving a man's life. Before that, he'd served in the military in Afghanistan. Now, he was home, injured and hurting. Thankfully, he had his wife and 2 kids for support. But it turned out the damage was much worse than they'd initially thought. He had a bulged disc in his neck, and post-concussion syndrome, which is basically a mild traumatic brain injury. He couldn't work for months, and the pain was constant.
It was killing me. To be cooped up in the house and not being able to do anything, it was very hard on me. I started to fall into depression, and I was having anxiety of staying home and not being able to do stuff and go out, because I was in pain, constant pain, and wouldn't go away. I couldn't go play volleyball. I couldn't wrestle with my kids. I couldn't play soccer with my son because I couldn't run. So that was, it was hurting me emotionally and mentally. It caused me to be very angry and temperamental with my family, which was not fun. Which that's kind of why I'm in the situation I'm in now.
That summer, 2 days after his 7th wedding anniversary, his wife packed her things and moved out. A month later, they'd filed for divorce.
I was destroyed. I was with her for 9 total years. We had 2 kids. So it's been a year now. But it was really rough. It's something that I gotta live with. But, you know, I'm alive. My kids love me. I love my kids. That's my main focus, you know, my kids.
Coming up after the break, the fight may have turned Cameron's life upside down, but it also pointed to a much larger rift. No matter who you ask, the fight caught on camera in Casey was a defining moment. It altered policing in the complex, as well as the life of Officer Cameron and the 2 men who were convicted of felonies. But more broadly, it laid bare the fractured relationship between the community and the police. And that's what a lawyer named Mary Ruth Pate wanted to stress while representing the man who assaulted Officer Cameron. She knew there was no defense for her client punching a police officer, but there was context, a fury in Casey that had built up over years.
I saw it as a chance to point out that, you know, this is not an isolated incident. This is not something that's another city's problem. This is our problem, too.
Pate, a public defender, had heard a lot about the tenuous relationship between Casey residents and the police, how they felt singled out. But while other cities and the country were reckoning with the treatment of African Americans by police, Nashville wasn't in a very reflective mode. There had been fatal shootings by police, but none garnering much attention. And at times, the relationship seemed oddly chummy. After Ferguson, when Nashvillians marched in protest, police greeted them with cups of coffee and hot cocoa. Officers shook protesters' hands. As Pate described it, in this post-Ferguson era, the fight in Casey was the first public tumult between the department and the city's Black residents.
You know, it happened in Missouri and it happened in Baltimore and things that happened there, but this is the first time it happened here.
A trial would have given Pate a forum to go public, vent about this fraught relationship, but that didn't happen. Her client took a plea deal. During sentencing, she broached the topic briefly, but the judge shut her down. I'm unclear about why you're bringing all this up, the judge told Pate during the sentencing hearing.
Judge, because the point is that this didn't occur in a vacuum, and that this doesn't absolve Mr. Shane and Mr. Mays of their responsibility. I'm bringing this up because this is part of the culture that unfortunately we live in, and it's something that we cannot ignore, the social context that takes place here. But if you want me to get to the point, I'll get to the point.
If you want me to get to the point, I'll get to the point, Pate tells the judge, cutting to the specifics of the case. She knew her argument might fall flat. In an earlier hearing, a different judge had called the beating a blow against law enforcement. You weren't just kicking him as a man, the judge told one defendant. You were kicking him as law and order. And in a certain way, Pate agreed with the judge. She just saw it from the other side. People were frustrated. There was an anger coursing through Casey, and the police were an easy target. Other than the violence and the new cameras, some compelling information emerged. A group of Nashville lawyers and activists released a stunning report analyzing nearly 2 million traffic stops. It showed Black drivers in Nashville were being pulled over and searched far more often than white drivers. It was Nashville's version of stop and frisk, And for Black neighborhoods like Casey, the report validated long-held frustrations. But the police chief, Steve Anderson, dismissed the report entirely. Despite its grounding in the police department's own data, the chief called it a false narrative and morally disingenuous. Pate, the public defender, she was unequivocal. In her mind, the fight between Officer Cameron and her client signaled unrest, a sure sign that things would only get worse.
11, we got shots fired. Strike 13, shots fired.
I need to tell you.
Army 47, male, black.
10-4, grade 13, shots fired towards you or someone else.
Shots fired towards suspect. Suspect down.
10 months after the fight in Casey, on a warm Friday afternoon in early February, a man named Jacquees Clemens ran a stop sign in Casey. Surveillance footage shows him rolling through the stop and slipping into a parking spot near his apartment on South 6th Street. Then, an officer named Joshua Lippert pulls up behind him. It begins as a basic traffic stop, but Clemens, a 31-year-old father of two, flees when he gets out of his truck and sees Lippert. There's some dispute about what happens after a short foot chase, even with the surveillance video, but police say Clemens dropped a loaded revolver. When he retrieved it, Lippert shot him 3 times in the back. The bullets lodged in Clemens' lung, his liver, and his hip ultimately killed him. Clemens was black and Officer Lippert white. The entire thing was less than a minute, and it was all caught on video by some of the same cameras installed after Officer Cameron's assault.
Breaking news, we just got surveillance video of today's officer-involved shooting. Here it is. I want you to take a good look.
Police say this .357 Magnum fell to the ground and Clemens grabbed it, with Officer Lippert shooting and killing Clemens when Lippert thought his life was in imminent danger.
Suddenly, Nashville was having this conversation whether it wanted to or not. To many in Casey, the connection between Clemens' death and the over-policing of African Americans seemed obvious. An analysis of Lippert's traffic stops the previous year showed he was pulling over and searching black drivers at astronomical rates. Compared to his colleagues who patrolled the same areas, Lippert was stopping black drivers up to 50% more and searching them 5 times the rate of other officers. The day after the shooting, friends and residents gathered in Casey. Some questioned whether Clemens even had a gun. Others just saw a man trying to get away, not someone threatening an officer. And they all wondered if Lippert would be held accountable.
He just needs to be held up to what he did. He's a murderer. That's just how I feel.
That's what brought me out here, the video. You feel me? Like, you shouldn't have to shoot nobody in the back if your life was in danger. You could have tased him. You could have did anything but killed him.
Man, I know the hardest job in the world is being a police officer, but, you know, if he was wrong, he was wrong. If he wasn't, he wasn't. You know what I mean?
Today, when I saw the video, I'm watching exactly what happened, and what happened is he was running away from this officer.
But out of the gate, the police had a very different interpretation of the video, and the department spokesman, Don Aaron, hawked it feverishly in press releases and in calls to reporters. He said the video showed Clemens starting it all by charging at Officer Lippert and then fleeing. The video, he said, proved Clemens was the aggressor. This is Aaron, the day after the shooting, on the phone with a WPLN reporter.
The officer didn't escalate this. I mean, again, I need to refer you back to the video. The officer is standing there, and the man charges him and rams him. I mean, the officer didn't escalate that.
In a second interview with detectives, this time having seen the footage, Officer Lippert told the same story.
After reviewing the tape, I mean, he just kind of makes a beeline and body checks me.
He just kind of makes a beeline and body checks me, Lippert says. Three days after the shooting, detectives went to Casey looking for an eyewitness. They carried digital recorders to capture their interactions. The witness wasn't there, but Clemens' family was, and understandably, they were upset, especially his sister, Asia.
Yeah, and don't come back and ask no questions, because ain't no motherfucking witnesses. Ain't no witnesses, the camera is the witness. Y'all see what the fuck they did? He is the goddamn girl! He is the girl!
Come on, baby.
You know they're hurting.
At this point, the police had released a lot of footage. But compared to the hundreds of cameras in Casey, residents felt like there should be more, enough to answer all the lingering questions. Once Asia and the other family members calmed down, they were able to talk with the detectives.
What the cameras gonna say for y'all investigation? That's all I want to know. What do the cameras not tell y'all?
We're reviewing that as well. We're not.
Okay, then I have another question. Why did y'all use the cameras right here? There's clearly one right here inside the building just directly on the parking spot where he got gunned down at. Why they didn't use that camera right there? Why they use these way across the street and not there where that's right there in front of the parking spot that you shot him at?
Show me that camera.
Okay, let's walk.
There's cameras
all over.
Yeah, plenty of them. Let's go. Tamika, Clemens' girlfriend, shows the detective the camera she's talking about. Meanwhile, her neighbor Christina can't stop pointing out all the other camera angles the police could pull footage from.
There's a camera right here.
Oh, yeah.
On the end of this building. They're on every building.
It's everyone.
They should get that one right there.
Right clear.
Are these cameras all live?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, they record. The only problem.
Yeah, they record, he says, adding that they'll double check that they have the angle she's talking about. The next day, after retrieving more footage, the police realize something. Their story had been wrong. What Lippert said in his second interview about Clemens making a beeline and body checking him, it wasn't true. There was no charging, no ramming, no body check. The new video showed Clemens was simply trying to flee, running first in one direction and then quickly changing course. Suddenly, the police were backpedaling. The media was scrambling to update the story, and the community was furious.
Why are we here? Justice for Drag Queens!
Why are we here?
Justice for Drag Queens!
In the wake of the Clemens shooting, activists demanded an independent inquiry, a first for the city, which was used to investigating its own shootings by police. And they got it. Much to the chagrin of the police department, the state's top law enforcement agency launched its own probe. The Department of Justice got involved, too. In the end, despite three shots to the back and a changing story, Officer Lippert was cleared of any wrongdoing. Clemens had a gun, authorities said. That trumped everything. It's been a year since the shooting. The department is still reviewing whether Lippert followed protocol, and in turn, whether he should be disciplined or not. In the meantime, he's been reassigned to a desk job. With no word of Lippert's professional fate, activists and family members began a sit-in outside the East Precinct. They wanted Lippert fired. And Clemens' mother wrote an open letter to the police chief, asking to meet. "You have it within your power to give us some peace," she wrote. After months of asking and a few moments in which a meeting seemed possible, Chief Anderson still hasn't met with Clemens' mother. And while the incidents with Officer Cameron and Officer Lippert couldn't have ended more differently, many Casey residents connect them. Clemens' girlfriend, Tamika, did while speaking with detectives.
All right. And when they beat the police officer up there,
there was probable cause
to shoot them. You should have pulled, he didn't pull out no taser, he didn't pull out his gun, he done none of that.
Brian Shannon, the 22-year-old who fought with Officer Cameron, was convicted of aggravated assault, a felony, the first on his record. He served 30 days in jail, on weekends between his shifts at a fast food restaurant. Shannon's cousin, Michael Mays, the guy who kicked Cameron in the head, he had prior convictions and as a result was sentenced to 4 years in prison. For Officer Cameron, his divorce is settled. He and his ex-wife have 50-50 custody of their kids. Recently, other departments started showing the video at police trainings as an example of good instincts and tactics because he didn't stop fighting and he didn't pull his weapon. Cameron's brother, who was going through the Denver Police Academy, watched it in his training. When Cameron went to his graduation, he was greeted by the cadets.
They were like meeting like somebody famous. It was so funny. And then their instructors came and shook my hand and, you know, said, you know, good job out there and stuff like that.
After months off the job, Cameron's back to work in the same precinct, actually, patrolling the same streets. He admits he avoided Casey for months, only going if he absolutely had to. He had PTSD from the incident, he said, and it caused him to be more on edge. Counseling helped. So did being patient with himself. to realize the fight wasn't personal.
When after my incident happened, you know, I just felt like nobody cared about police. I said, you know, them people down there, that whatever, they wouldn't be like that. They don't need police down there then. Well, obviously, I've changed my mind about things because obviously you have time to reflect.
One thing that's really helped Cameron reconnect with Casey is spending time with the kids who live there. He'll sometimes throw a football with them before a shift or play a game of pickup basketball with a few other officers. As a father, he can't help but see them the same way he sees his own children. And in his mind, the feeling goes both ways. To the kids, he's just a friendly cop, not that guy who got beat up down the block.
I don't know if the kids would be in an icebreaker or not, but they do help. You know, because kids are innocent, and you see the joy and the cheer inside their little minds. They just have no recollection of what's going on in life. They're just happy.
Get ready. Get set. Go!
They're making the best out of everything. They could be sitting there playing in the dirt. In their little mind, they're creating something in the dirt.
Today, the relationship between Casey residents and the police is still fraught. But some say things have eased slightly. The precinct commander has a few more officers on foot patrol now. Some play night basketball with the kids and hand out stickers. Anything to connect with residents without the armor of a police cruiser. But it's slow going. They've added more cameras, too. There are now more than 200 scattered around Casey, tucked up high in the corners of buildings. Police say they've been crucial to solving crimes. Since they were installed after Officer Cameron's assault, they've helped solve 6 of the 9 homicides in Casey. But they seem to do less as far as deterring crime. Homicides are the highest in nearly 3 decades, and shootings practically doubled in 2017. There's no doubt that Casey residents want the community to be safer. Of course they do. But with so many cameras, it can feel like you're living in a fishbowl. Like everyone is watching and no one's connecting. Like Casey's being overseen from somewhere way up high. It's also removed. So Orwellian. Which only further isolates, drives an even bigger wedge between Casey and the rest of the neighborhood. But the cameras are there to stay. Take the new building, for example. The one on the south side of the project, signaling this huge remaking of Casey, along the outside and lining the hallways, are 57 cameras. Next time on The Promise, Big Man feels this isolation growing by the day, and he worries what his new, more well-off neighbors might do if he stepped outside the fishbowl and neighbor to neighbor asked for a cup of sugar.
But if you walk up there and knock on one of them doors and say, can I have a cup of sugar? It's going to be about 8 polices, SWAT team, and they're going to tell you who's doing a burglary.
We put that theory to the test and maybe make a friend while we're at it. That's next time on The Promise, stories from public housing on the brink of transformation. The Promise is a production of Nashville Public Radio. Editing for this episode came from WPLN's Blake Farmer and Anita Bug, with additional editing by Tony Gonzalez, Emily Siner, Chaz Sisk, and Julieta Martinelli. This episode was written and produced by me, Mariba Knight. Sound design by Tony Gonzalez, and fact-checking by Steve Cavendish. Our theme music is by The Insider, additional music by Fleslet, all found through the Free Music Archive. The archival news clips were from News Channel 5 and WKRN, with additional audio from the Metro Nashville Police Department and Andrew Hunter. Go to our website, WPLN.org, to see photos of Casey and listen to previous episodes.
If you like The Promise, check out We Home. It's a podcast about South Nashville, a place where history, policy, business interests, and culture intersect. You'll hear from artists and entrepreneurs, activists and developers, new residents and old who are all invested in how South Nashville grows. Find it on WeHomePodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts.